information that comes out of there. When I lived in the Bay Area, I was a member of KPFA, of Pacifica Radio, and I could hold my own in some really deep discussions concerning a political science and a political economy with PhDs in the relevant topics. And that's like, they never seen me around campus. Like, where did you learn that? It's like, from community radio. So when I came to Portland and I found KBOO, I was so relieved that there was something like this here. I wasn't sure I would find something similar. And I thank KPFA and Pacifica for its assistance in getting KBOO off the ground back in 1968. And I thank KBOO for continuing to exist for all those 48 years, those 20, I'm sure by now, almost 25 million commercial-free minutes. And part of how I give back is with my time and energy running the board here and making sure that the microphones are turned on and adjusted to the proper level so that you can hear Justin sharing with you his take on the importance of community media, and to make sure that the lights and the telephones are properly connected so that you can call 877-500-5266 and make your pledge of support to your community media resource. That's KBOO Portland, and it exists because you and your friends and neighbors have been there for KBOO, just as KBOO has been there for you and yours, and people you've never even met. We're going to carry on with our programming on the incomparable radio zine. Well, you'll just have to stay tuned and find out. I'm gonna let my friend Kanan take it for a moment to thank some other community partners, and we'd sure like to thank you when you call 877-500-5266.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Po Shine's Cafe de la Sol, a Black-owned restaurant located at 8139 North Denver Avenue in the Kenton neighborhood, serving Southern soul food. Lunch was provided by Produce Row Cafe on 204 Southeast Oak Street. Produce Row has been serving pub food and drink since 1953. Dinner was provided by Marrakesh on 1201 Northwest 21st Avenue. Marrakesh serves traditional Moroccan food out of their restaurant in Northwest Portland. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, and this is Pacific Underground, the show where Asians and Pacific Islanders in Oregon take the mic into our own hands. I'm Kanan Schlesinger, one of your live hosts for today.
And I'm Tabitha Teo. To kick off this special KBOO membership drive show, we're going to start off with a recurring segment we call API Nerd Talk, where we talk all things nerdy and geeky. Coming up next Friday, April 29th, here in the Rose City, the Oregon Symphony is playing the music of John Williams. Yay! And we got a chance to talk to the man who will literally be the center stage of it.
Producer Jenna Yokoyama interviewed Oregon Symphony conductor Paul Kim. Paul was born in Seoul, Korea, and raised in Philly from the time he was 10. He's now a major rising star in the competitive and prestigious world of orchestral conducting. Here he is, talking about what's on the program for his upcoming John Williams concert.
Star Wars, of course. Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, if you're doing John Williams, you gotta have Star Wars, Harry Potter, and then some interesting stuff like Memoirs of a Geisha.
Oh, he did that one?
Yeah.
He does every movie.
Yeah, he does. He does. And of course, there's Schindler's List, some from Indiana Jones, even some movies that we might not be so familiar with. We're going to do them. We're definitely looking forward to it. It's a very demanding piece for the orchestra, especially the brass. So we'll see what happens. But you realize this music was created for the studio, where you can make mistakes and take breaks if you need to. But here, we're going to be in one session, just straight through everything. And the audience, of course, demands perfection.
When do you personally remember first hearing like your first John Williams score?
I can tell you, my first movie ever in the theater was the, Indiana Jones, the third one. What is that third one?
Really
with
bad.
Sean Connery. I mean, of course, Sean Connery wasn't before.
Don't remember. Isn't that the one where they go and search for the Grail at the end and they have to like step on the things and they're like, oh, Jehovah?
Yeah, exactly. The Last Crusade.
Last Crusade. Okay.
Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. That was my first movie in the theater ever. And I was completely blown away by it. I was probably blown away by the music more than I realized back then.
Are you picturing all these movies when you're standing up there? Is that important for you to imagine what this music is actually like portraying? Or
yeah, if it helps you. But I think a lot of the times that when you play this music, we have reactions. And just like, you know, if you listen to Tchaikovsky and it reminds you of something that happened in the past, or it touches you in many ways. And I think it's the same way with movie music and John Williams' music. It probably will recall the scene that was the music was in.
So iconic. I was speaking to one of my friends, what would you ask a conductor about this? And he's like, oh, does he think about the brontosaurus when he hears Jurassic Park?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
For a lot of people, this is kind of their one way of really being exposed to orchestral music.
That's right. We have a whole new genre now because people demand that. We do music with the movies. You come and you see not just your favorite film, but you also see musicians making music on stage live, and that fascinates people. You know, how much work goes into it, you know, how the conductor is going crazy with the click track and with the earpiece and trying to get this thing organized.
That seems really exhausting, the conducting something to a movie screen.
Oh, it's impossible.
It seems like like the ultimate game in timing. Like how?
Yes. Exactly. It's a glorified guesswork.
Tell us about your position at the Oregon Symphony.
My position at the Oregon Symphony is the resident conductor. It means I conduct basically everything without discretion.
So what does everything include?
Includes classical, some pops, special concerts, educational, family, you name it. I'm there. I conduct.
By the way, what do I say your name is? Are you Paul Kim?
Paul, yeah.
I noticed online it's Paul Gunn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
How do I say your name on like to announce you? Is this Paul Kim or Paul Gunn?
Just Paul Kim.
Paul Kim.
Fine, yeah.
There's a question. Why no Korean name? When do you choose to use it and when don't you?
Oh, it's actually I started using it because there's I think so many Paul Kims out there. And they're I think there are even conductors who are named Paul Kim. And I thought, you know, well, I can't have that. There's only one Paul Kim. No. That's actually part of the reason. But, you know, Paul is something. And I think it was my parents who gave it to me. I don't know why. But, you know, I just kept it to this day. And I use my Korean name whenever I can. And besides, you don't need my first name to realize that I'm Korean or... You just
So being an Asian conductor is kind of a rarity in the conducting world.
It is.
Why is that?
That's difficult. That's a very difficult question because we cannot speak about this in a very short amount of time. There's so many factors that we have to consider when we talk about the makeup of a conductor. Unfortunately, conducting is a visual art. Yes, of course, we spend many hours at home studying the music, but what comes out is 100% visual. The conductor needs to communicate to the orchestra. How does he do that? Verbally? Not in a concert. You can't talk in a concert. But you have to show physically. And when it's 100% physical, you cannot get away from the fact that everything is visual. And you cannot get away from the fact that you're either male or female, Caucasian or Asian. Yes, race has something to do with it. How you look has something to do with it. How tall, how short. It's everything factors into the makeup of a conductor, you see? So it's a question that cannot be answered easily. But perhaps, you know, number of people in the music industry needs to start thinking about. Perhaps we need to move forward. I mean, it's not just music. As a civilization, we struggle with the same thing for many, many years, right? And the issues will always be there. One thing I know for sure, as a musician, as an Asian musician, I realize that I will not reap benefit from it by changing course. I am in the middle of changing courses. Maybe something will change in the next generation, maybe the one after, but I'm still in the middle of it. And that's actually what's exciting about it. And that's one of many things that drives me as an Asian musician, is that I hopefully will be able to make an impact for who comes after.
That was Pacific Underground producer Jenna Yokoyama talking with Oregon Symphony conductor Paul Kim. It's time for a short membership drive break, but stay tuned because up next we're going to continue the nerd fun by talking about Asians and Star Wars.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. We're in the third day of our membership drive, and you're listening to Pacific Underground, and you're joined with actually two people of the Pacific Underground team. I'm Jenna, and we also have the magical Pamela.
This is me being magical. This is how I do every drive. This is how I do every day. Just magic Pam.
You're making it all happen, because Pam here, what is your role in this membership drive?
So I have a couple of different roles. I get to be a volunteer in some ways, in the way that I am a part of this collective. I'm also on some other shows on KBOO, but I'm also on staff. I am the membership director. So pretty much I'm
the woman in charge today.
Yes. Woman of color in charge, please.
Woo-hoo! And that's what we love about Pacific Underground, is that we are a group of Asian and Pacific Islanders. We're taking the mic into our own hands, and you can only find that here on KBOO. So why don't you join us and become a member today? The phone number is 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. Or maybe you're one of our many listeners who are listening online to Pacific Underground right now, and you can donate online too at kboo.fm. We have a beautiful donate button up in the corner. And Pam, what do we got for maybe some gifts that we got going on?
Oh my God. If you are on our Facebook or on our Twitter, you've already found the art that we've had donated by other great artists, Albert Nguyen. But today we have art that has been donated by Stephen Poon at outnerdme.com. $175 minimum pledge will get you signed Star Wars art. I love you.
Oh, but what's most important about this hour is that we have, you just heard that interview by Paul Kim and me. That was me. You can actually get tickets to the sold out, absolutely sold out John Williams concert. We have a set of tickets. And Pam, how much is the minimum pledge for that?
That one is $175 also.
So if you can pledge $175, which is just a mere, what is that, less than $15 a month, you can get tickets to the sold-out John Williams concert being conducted there by conductor Paul Kim. You can hear the Star Wars music. I think they're doing Harry Potter music. They're doing all sorts of stuff. They're doing Superman music. So you can get that if you call. You got to call, though, at 877-500-5266 and become a member of KBOO today. That's 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
Thanks, Jenna. Thanks, Pam. Welcome back. You're listening to Pacific Underground. We're at KBOO live today. It's the middle of the membership drive. Thank you so much. If you are supporting us, please continue to do so. I'm one of your live hosts, Kanan Schlesinger.
And I'm Tabitha Teo. Here at Pacific Underground, we have some serious hardcore fan love for Star Wars, but we're also social justice advocates who can't help but take notice of the lack of APIs in the science fiction movie world.
So on Wednesday evening, if you were tuned in, KBOO played a Pacific Underground one-hour special where we talked, complained, joked around, showed some love for Asians in Star Wars, but it was mostly the lack thereof. Here's a short clip from Wednesday's show. We're starting off talking about an esoteric Asian-looking alien, Nien Num, from Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Everyone that I've talked to about this sees him as Asian.
Yeah, like when I was a kid, I thought he was Asian. Like, I didn't think that he wasn't Asian until this last week when Kanan brought him up as, this is a problematic character. I was like, oh my God, I thought that that was an Asian alien. So what we have is a clip of Nien Num speaking. And I mean, I don't know if it's significant or whatever, but this is the gibberish he speaks. Okay, so that doesn't like necessarily sound like any sort of language.
It's sped up
that I can
and
identify.
Reversed. I feel like this is a Missy song. Why? I don't understand. Like it's
he puts his thing down.
Yeah,
puts
it definitely sounds
it.
Like it's sped up.
So it's his appearance more than his made up language.
Well, and then like the other thing about him that makes him really problematic for a lot of people is that he's kind of like a caricature of the. You know, like
Asian
the Jap folk. Character from like World War II thing. We have like the buck tooth and like the overly exaggerated slanty eyes. And then the worst part about him is that he's always giggling. He's always like, oh, 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 oh. And he's like, there's all these scenes. You can even like find a YouTube video of somebody making a compilation of just all his giggling scenes. So he's like this terrible caricature of like the most racist, like kind of Asian from the 1930s and 40s. So, but you know, I identified with him as a kid. He was my Asian alien.
Yeah, like the first time I saw Jedi, like even though I know these are supposed to be aliens, but I thought, oh, he looks the closest out of all the characters, he looks the closest to me. And I always felt like his dowels looked kind of like he was wearing like those Chinese opera masks. And yeah, like Maybe I was like thinking too much into it. That it's like, oh, he's an Asian alien.
But you want to see something disturbing? When you put him all on one page, he looks super creepy, right?
Yeah,
see
he
by
does.
Himself.
There's also Ekilark Yong, who is the Y-wing pilot, and he's flying a Y-wing
and
at
this
the
is
same
the Return
time
of the Jedi, right?
Yeah, same time, same movie. It's a trap, obviously. Admiral Akbar says it, and then like 15 seconds later, he says this.
There's too many of them. I'm there!
And so he immediately like dies.
Phil Marin does those good YouTube videos where they show the only lines spoken by people of color in movies, and it's like
I love the one for Return of the King. Because there
wouldn't
are no people of color.
I know, like, right? I was about. Wouldn't it be like a 1 second video?
It's a 9 second video where they show you nothing. It's fantastic.
Oh, man.
That's awesome. Wait, what? Okay, so for all of just the original trilogy, all of the Asians sound like what? There's too many of them.
I'm hit!
I'm hit.
Well, and the thing is, like, it takes. Because this is. You know, was the third movie that came out, Episode 6. And so it took three movies before an Asian person had a speaking line. And then he dies 6 seconds later.
And he's dying, yeah.
And he's not even credited in the credits.
Oh, he's not?
Yeah. Aww. So you weigh all those movies, and then what you're left with is either being satisfied that your one Asian guy had a glorious 6 second death, or that you got a creepy Asian alien. Everybody wins.
Yay, representation
like
in media. Sorry.
So in the original first two movies, there are absolutely
no APIs.
None. But just like the honorary alien that happens in episode 6, I had an honorary alien from episodes 1 and 2, or 4 and 5 when they first came out, and that was Yoda, because he reminded me of my great-grandfather when I was a kid.
I also always kind of interpreted Yoda as like those Shaolin, or maybe to a Buddhist monk, that hermit that just sits on a mountain cave, meditates for 50 years, and is suddenly like enlightened, knows everything, and he's going to teach you the ways of the Force.
But can't speak English correctly for some reason, because they need that.
Yeah.
Rejoice for those around you who transform into the Force. Mourn them do not. Miss them do not. Attachment leads to jealousy. The shadow of greed, that is.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, Asian mysticism kind of weaves its way into Star Wars through the Force. And I've heard comparisons of, like, chi energy being a kind of inspiring for, like, the Force and what it is. Something that's all around you, and you, and those that are sensitive can use it to manipulate their surroundings.
So you can have the chi force, but you can't be Asian.
I know, you can't be Asian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, I see how it goes. All the Force being reserved for all the white people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because trying to think of, even though we all don't want to remember the prequel movies, but when they show, like, the Jedi Council, I don't think I remember any API Jedi members.
There's only one, and she is only in, like, one scene in Attack of the Clones, episode 2.
Does she die?
Maybe. They don't address it, and no one seems to know, not even on Wikipedia. she's a Jedi, and she, like, runs into the ring. It's like the Battle of Geonosis. It's like a 2-second pan. I think she has like 2 scenes where she's like flipping around and using a lightsaber. So that's cool.
That was a clip of a longer special, which you can find online. Just search for us on SoundCloud or iTunes. Oh, look, it's time for another break with our producers, Jenna and Pamela.
Jenna and Pam are going to be talking to us and the rest of y'all about what you can stand to win if you call in right now and pledge to KBOO. Support us, support the community. And up next, after that, we'll be having a live discussion with the entire Pacific Underground team in a segment we call What's in a Name. But first, we're going to go to Jenna and Pam.
You're listening to KBOO here on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and we're in our spring membership drive, and I'm joined here with Pamela. Pamela, tell us all about what you got going on there.
Well, there's a lot going on, but the first thing I want everyone to do is call us 877-500-5266. Remember, that number is going to be, when you close your eyes, it's going to be on one eyelid, 877-500, and the other one, 5266. It's just, that's what we got going on here. We are so psyched. We have so much to raise, and I know that we're going to do it. Thank you so much already to the people who gave online at kboo.fm. Joanna from Northeast Portland, Brendan from Northeast Portland, who says KBOO is awesome. Leslie from Southeast Portland, who says you guys are the best. And Anna from Southwest Portland, who really appreciated last night's retrospective on the life of the great artist Prince. So if you missed it, the audio is now online on the right side of our new homepage under latest audio. What else have we got, Jenna?
Well, what we got is, first of all, the phone number. Again, for those eyelids, 877-500-5266. Or if you want to put it on your forehead, you can put the website address up there at kboo.fm, where you can also donate. We have a special pretty donate button up there in the corner. We really appreciate it if you become a sustaining member. Maybe you can give like $5 a month. Maybe $10 a month, maybe $20 a month, whatever you can give, we will really appreciate it, because we know you appreciate what's on the radio right now, which is Pacific Underground, the show for APIs, where we are taking the mic into our own hands, and that's the kind of diversity of program we have here on the KBOO. Again, 877-500-KBOO. That's 877-500-5266. Because you want to support the beautiful amount of radio that's coming out of your speakers right now and hitting your ears, and you're thinking, wow, Asian and Star Wars, what does that have to do with me? Well, it has everything to do with you, and you know it. So give us a call at 877-500-5266. Because even though we can have fun talking about Asians and Star Wars, we are also talking about issues that really, really matter to the community, especially to the API community. So if you love how KABU makes it important to represent all the different voices here in the community, give us a call or go online, kboo.fm. What membership stuff do we have exclusively here for our Pacific Underground show, Pamela?
Well, exclusively, we already had that art, Batman in Portland and Captain America in Portland. And today, I mean, it's just kind of we're continuing the Star Wars theme with the I Love You, I Know set of two posters that we had donated from outnerdme.com. Definitely, again, those John Williams tickets. It's sold out. Come on.
Wow, you can't get tickets. The only way to get it is to call in.
And every part of what we're trying to do with this drive is to continue the kind of programming. You're getting to hear things right from the communities themselves. So it was really important. I can even speak to this. It was I and Alan Montecilio who had first put the show together for Pacific Underground. And it was really important for us to be able to speak to what mattered to us. Yes, pop culture may seem that, you know, superficial upon first listen. But when you think about all the different ways that other communities are able to see themselves in art, and when Asians and Pacific Islanders get shut out of that kind of dialogue, what it's going to do for people throughout, you know, their lives, we're trying to really just disrupt that and really be able to speak from our own stories. Honestly, where else are you hearing that? Where are you hearing
Nowhere.
Our stories? And this is what's been going on at KABU. We've been continuing a tradition where we have had a presence of Asian Americans here. APA Compass, we definitely have a lot to owe to them. 10 years on KABU, one program on Asian Pacific American public affairs. So please call 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
Does it hurt?
I was like right on.
This is Pacific Underground on KABU. I'm Alan Montecilio, one of the producers of the show. I'm going to steer the ship just for a few minutes. Canon and Tabitha have been hosting. But I'm here to talk about our names in a segment we're calling What's in a Name. It's easy to forget the stories behind our names, especially if you're a person of color in this country. Sometimes people mispronounce it. Sometimes people have Asian names and American names. So we're going to roundtable about our name. The entire Pacific Underground crew is here. Pamela Santos, Kanan Schlesinger, Tabitha Teo, and Jenna Yokoyama.
Hey.
Hey,
everybody.
Hey.
Jenna, you were the brains behind this discussion idea. What are some of your thoughts about your name?
Well, I came up with this idea about what's a name because I always question my own name. I actually don't like my name, Jenna, and I kind of wish I was called by what we call my Japanese name, Rika. And the reason I don't like my name is because of a story about my grandmother. My grandmother was actually born as Kyoko, and then she went to kindergarten on the first day, and her white teacher told her that Kyoko was apparently too hard to pronounce, so she changed her name to Mary. And I didn't learn the story till I was an adult, and so I thought my whole life that my grandmother's name was Mary, and then she said, no, that's not the name on my birth certificate. My white teacher changed it so that it would be easier to pronounce for everybody else. She came home and told her parents, I'm no longer Kyoko, I'm Mary. And from that day on, her parents called her Mary, and everyone in our family took on English, quote-unquote English names. And, you know, it just has rubbed me the wrong way ever since then. So whenever I hear Jenna, I'm just like, oh, God, is that my Mary? That's my Mary.
Would you change it? Would you change your name?
Maybe. I've been thinking about it a lot. But you know what? At the same time, I just so easily identify with Jenna that I think I'm just too lazy to go through the change. But maybe y'all can convince me with this roundtable here.
Yeah. Kanan, I want to turn to you. When you were interviewed on this show last month, I remember the first thing that you said was, my name is Kanan Kenji Nakatomi Schlesinger, and I still don't get it. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so my first name's Kanan, and that's kind of an ambiguous name. It's like, it's not explicitly white or Caucasian, but it's also, you know, not super exotic. I mean, people see it in like when they're like calling like roll or like in attendance in school is always like Kanan, and I would always have to like cut them off and be like, yeah. I'm here, and so Kanan is actually just like pretty much a phonetic choice for my parents. They're just like, oh, I like this place in Maine where we're driving through. My mom was like super pregnant and they're trying to figure out a name and they decided on Canaan. And it's kind of funny because my...
So it's not a Jewish, of Jewish origin. They just...
Not directly, but Canaan is kind of like where the Israelites settled.
Mm-hmm, right, right.
In modern day Palestine.
Yeah.
So it's not like directly, but I guess like it's kind of convenient that it is. And then Kenji is like a nod to like my half of Japanese lineage. And then Nakatomi is my mom's maiden name because she was like, wait, why is he going to be Kanan Kenji Schlesinger?
Yeah.
What about my name? What's up with this patriarchy?
Do you feel like your life would have been different if it wasn't your Japanese name that was sandwiched in between your first and last name, but the sort of more West, like Kanan, what if it was Kenji? What if you're a Kenji Schlesinger or Kenji Kanan Schlesinger Nakatomi?
Right. I have been thinking recently, like, what if my name was Kenji Nakatomi? Like,
it could have been.
My sense of self, my identity growing up would be super different. And I think like how people viewed me would be much different. I think people would view me as less white than I was viewed as when I grew up as Kanan Schlesinger. So it's interesting. I've contemplated changing my name too.
Hmm. Tabitha Tia, what about you? What are some of your thoughts?
So growing up, I really didn't like my name because Tabitha, like, I grew
what
up
don't
with
you all, like about it?
I grew up with all these girls in my school that were named like Sarah, Michelle, and Jennifer, and like Tabitha. It's like, doesn't have the same ring. And then my last name is spelled T-E-O. And so some kids at school would tease me and call me Tabitha Toe. And my sister,
so mean.
My sister was actually even meaner because it's a biblical name, and it even says in the translation of the Bible that Tabitha, of which the Greek name version is Dorcas, and so my sister would tease me and call me Dorcas, and so it's like, why am I stuck with this stupid name?
When kids really want to make fun of you,
there's always a way to make fun of someone's name when you're a kid. But
It is. But then as I got older, I would meet so many people like these Anglo names, and it created a lot of confusion in like classrooms when someone said like Thomas and like two people would raise their hand. But I knew like when they said Tabitha, like there's only one Tabitha and that's me. And then later on, people started calling me Tabby. And it's like, I really like that nickname. And so I started loving the fact that my name has like a built-in nickname and it's really cute.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love that like my middle name is Hua Yu. And it's Chinese for Chinese universe. And I also found out that like my maternal grandparents gave all the grandchildren a Chinese name. And like the more I learned about my name, the more I loved it, that it's like this collaborative family effort.
Yeah.
That like my parents gave me my first name, and my mom's grandparents gave me my middle name, and then I have my father's last name. And so it really just shows like my background and my history. And now I really love my name.
Awesome.
It's like I hardly ever meet any other Tabitha still. And like, there's only one Tabitha, and that's me.
You know, you were talking about nicknames, and that actually reminded me of Filipino names because they're pretty common in Filipino culture. I'm here with Pamela Santos, and I'm Alan Montecillo, and we're both Filipino, but our names are very, very different. And actually, I just want to start off by talking a bit about my name, which is Alan. I mean, Alan is an old English name. I'm full Filipino. People always ask me whether I'm mixed race. But the interesting thing is my last name is Montecillo, and is always mispronounced as Monticello. Always. My entire life. And that little switch of the I-N-E has meant such a huge difference. Like my name, because of the Spanish colonial roots of the Philippines, my name could have been Jose Garcia, and I could have looked exactly the same, and my life might have been very, very different. Because my name sounds kind of ambiguous and perhaps like Thomas Jefferson's house. That's the thing.
Every Hamilton reference.
Every Hamilton reference possible. Pamela Santos, what about you? What are some thoughts you have?
I also was going to talk about how I have that odd, so my first name having kind of an English origin name, and Santos there's so many Santoses in my class. And growing up, I grew up in Queens. So there were always, at least I grew up with three.
You're wearing a Mets hat right now.
Oh, come on. Of course I am. Three Santoses all through grade school and junior high. Then high school, there was a couple of different Santoses. Not all of us were even Filipino. And so that comes with all of us. The one thing we had in common was colonization. The Puerto Ricans and Filipinos, we all had that together.
It's a strange kinship across oceans between Filipinos and South Americans and Central Americans. And
it's like, you lost your name too? Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now we're all Catholic. Yeah.
Right? And it got to be that actually early Christianized Filipinos, they named themselves after the saints so much that there were actually too many. I do research on this. I'm going to hit you with that Wikipedia. Too many Santoses, San Jose's, San Antonio's, and San Buenaventura's. And after a while, not only that, there was just irregular ways of naming each other. So they used to, before the Spanish, and I love knowing this part of it, you used to name, get your surname from the name of your children. Hmm. So you have
interesting
Dimik and what do you call it? Father of Pitik or something. And they were like, nope, we need to get some taxes.
Yeah. So, well, the interesting thing too about the Philippines is that there is, you know, on the one hand, a lot of us have names of Spanish or Spanish origin or sounding like that. When the Spanish came as colonizers, and then the Americans came. So this added layer where, and my dad was telling me about this, and so this added layer where they show up and they say, what is your name? And they said, this guy says, for example, this is actually my uncle's name. My name is Gaudencio Mariano. And they say, I can't pronounce that. Your name's Dino now. And that's his nickname. And that's where the nicknames
that's
come.
How that
nicknames
happened?
Are incredibly common. The nickname is actually, nickname actually sounds very American and very, you know, it's like John or Dino or something else.
Boy.
There's a lot of...
And girlies.
Yes. those are names. Those are nicknames added on to much longer, formal, Spanish Catholic sounding names.
Do you know, like, your grandparents' long sounding kind of names?
Manuel Gabriel Montesilio. That's my grandfather's name. I don't... They were not super long. My name, for some reason, seemed almost devoid of any noticeably Spanish roots. Again, my middle name's Daniel and my last name is Montesilio. And again, I actually only just recently started saying it correctly. It is Montesilio. It's always has been, but it'd been, I just said Montesillo my whole life because everyone got it wrong. And you know, when it wasn't actually until I got into radio that I insisted that people had to say it, because people kept figuring out how to say it, and I would always hear them stammer through there and say Alan Monte de Chil. So that's just going to be a thing for my whole life.
How did you find out the correct pronunciation of your last name?
I think I just heard that's how my parents always said it to each other and to people in the Philippines. I don't know if there was ever like a sit down like, son, here's what you need to know about your name. Maybe that would have been helpful. Maybe I would have been less confused otherwise. But
Probably also made a difference. The American culture was really like coming through to the Philippines by the 60s. Well, actually, all throughout. Mm-hmm. They have everything over there. Like they had a Filipino Elvis during the 50s. They had all these kinds of things like disco soul in the Philippines in the 70s. So of course you're going to have some, you know, white names kind of like slipped in there.
Yeah. I mean, you can't help it too. There's so many streets named after, you know, on the one hand you have, San Antonio, you have churches upon churches upon churches with saints' names. And then you have Fonda Street and Roosevelt Street McKinley Street.
Why Roosevelt though? I mean, he called Filipinos terrible things during the Philippine-American War.
Oh, and McKinley just, you know, and Taft, they're all there.
Oh, internalized colonialism is rough.
That's the takeaway.
I have a question. I never really knew all this history about like Filipino names, but do you know if there's been like a grassroots effort to like reclaim like Filipino names before Spanish colonialism?
The short answer, I mean, the issue with that, I think, and this is a short answer, we're going to have to go to break soon, is that before the Spanish came, the Philippines wasn't a unified entity. So to the extent that there'd be roots, they would harken back to pre-colonial, before it was a nation, before it was a unified territory, which would probably go back to your particular ethnic groups, which would be sort of as a subset of, there's no pre-colonial, not in the same way, like pre-colonial unified Filipino identity to kind of go back to, I think.
I second that answer.
Well, it's time for a break. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to the Pacific Underground crew for sharing their thoughts. Stay tuned, because when we come back, we're going to be interviewing nerd and artist Stephen Poon, and then Simon Tam from the band The Slants.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. You're listening right now during the Spring Membership Drive, and that was the Pacific Underground team. Thank you guys for that segment. I am Jenna Yokoyama. I'm a producer there for Pacific Underground, which means I love the show, and I know you do too. So why don't you join us by becoming a member of KBOO by calling 1-877-500-526-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576-507-576- And just for our very special Pacific Underground listeners, we have some very special Pacific Underground guests. We have some very special tickets available for that Oregon Symphony concert, to the John Williams concert that is sold out. You can get tickets nowhere else. You can get it by calling in and becoming a member by calling in at 877-500-5866. And the interview that you heard at the beginning, we conducted the interview that you heard at the very beginning, we had Sirius Nurkia from Star Wars and John Series as well. We also have as well unreleased CD by the Slant Review calls in right now. Slant, if you call in right now, our very last segment coming up at 8 to 9, very last segment, interview with Simon Tam, interview with Slant. Simon's so great about the Slant. We want them to say a great big thank you to the Slant. They have donated to anybody who becomes a KBOO member. Anybody during this KBOO member, you can get a free album download, a from the Slant download, and it's called Slant Revolution. It's called Free Slant Revolution. Free download. If you become a member, free download. KBOO today. If you become a member, 77 KBOO today. 500-752-6500. I'm joined by Pamela, who just told us all about Pamela, who just told us all about her
name. Well, in the Philippines, my family would say Pamela. In the Philippines, my family would say Pamela. If I know someone's from Filipino, they're going to call me Pamela. If I know Filipino, they're going to call me Pamela. That's what you do. That's what I bring to this. I bring flavor. That's what I bring to this. I bring flavor.
I also wanted to say, what's so great about and it's so great just about very coming up interview with Simon Tam is that they really care about community radio.
You think about community radio, that's how you get certain indie bands on, indie spaces on, that you're not in able to do that in commercial radio. You're going to be able to do bands that are local, hear bands that are local right here in your town and city, right here in your town, and it's community radio. And that is the beauty of community radio.
Give us a call at 877-500-5267. Become a member today, and now we'll go back to Pacific today, and now we'll go back to Pacific Underground.
Hey, you're listening to Pacific Underground. We're doing a live show today. Pacific Underground. KBOO membership drive. Thank you so much for KBOO membership drive. Are you doing so much? If you haven't, please consider doing so. If you haven't, hear what this in the studio. So it's local artist Stephen Poon. It's local artist Stephen Poon. Stephen, thank you for being here. Me.com. Stephen. And so just to catch listeners up on your background, you were an art director, props master, graphic designer, then a jeweler. Now you make incredible posters. You just made an awesome Prince poster that you just showed me in commemoration of his recent passing yesterday. Can you describe your artwork and how you began making nerdy posters?
It started out with like, cause I work at Saturday Market, and so like at the market, there's like a lot of tourist people. So like I make stuff that's touristy. So my first one was like, it was like one of the, you know, old fashioned lampposts downtown, and it'll put like all the street names. And then my friend Scott asked me like, hey, could you make one for Battlestar Galactica? I'm like, yeah, sure. That's like, you know, one of my favorite, like, you know, sci-fi shows I watched when I was a kid. So, you know, I took the ships, you know, and then like, you know, I asked him like, you know, what should I put in it? He's like, well, you know, how about you put some of my favorite quotes. And, you know, from there on, like, people saw my work. It was like, hey, can you do the Goonies? Hey, can you do all these other shows? So, you know, I just kept continuing and going on.
So there's so many shades of nerd. Are you, like, a true nerd to all of the artwork?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like when I ask my fans, like, what's the best experience? They're like, your art's great, like, but it's like the connections I get with them. Like, I talk to them. Like, I'm not really, like, trying to sell my art at all. It's like, I'm just trying to, when I talk to my fans, it's all about the connections I get. It's like, did you watch this episode? Like, what did you think of this? You know, it's like, how did this end? Like, you know, and then it's like, when they see, like, get that connection and see my art, they connect. And it's like, that's why they love my work, is because of that connection.
So the fans play a lot into the inspiration.
Oh, yeah. Like
fueling you. And
oh, yeah, starting. Yeah, yeah. Like, my fans, like, I've had people steal my work a lot.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I would tell my fans and they would instantly be on my back, like, watching me. And, like, they would see other people, like, search for it and still, like, be like, hey, Steven, did you know, like, this person's stealing your work? Like, my community is huge. I love them. They're, like, so positive.
So, like, they act as your, like, watchdog, too, and they like,
oh, yeah. Like, it's more than just watchdog. Like, it's also the connection. Like, I just made, like, the Prince poster today, and I asked people, it's like, you know, give me your story of why you can relate to Prince. And I was just flooded with these amazing stories. Like, that made me more happy than, like, you know, than anything, just to know, like, I connected to them. They liked what I designed. It looked like the person. And it brought back all those great memories that, you know, that's what made them, like, a legend.
So I was talking a little bit to Pacific Underground producer Jenna, who you spoke with on the phone a little while ago. And she was talking about how you faced a little bit of prejudice when you were making jewelry at the Saturday Market. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, like, it sucks, but it's like, like, it's easy to, like, hate people for doing stuff like that. So I like to challenge myself and try to be a better person. But, like, my story was, like, when I used to make jewelry, I was a very good glass artist. But, you know, like, a lot of people either say it's like, oh, it's just glass. It's nothing interesting. But then the true people who know, it's like, when I made my glass, it's, like, super, super beautiful. And that's why I did so well. But the story I had that really sucked was, like, I was selling one day. And then, like, these two ladies were very interested in my artwork. You know, they're looking at it. They're about to purchase. And then the husband walks by, you know, with his, you know, a little baby cart with their kids. And he's like, don't buy it. It's, you know, it's made from China, you know. And, like, it, like, you know, it stung, you know. But it's like, you know, I'm not going to yell at them. It's not going to fix, you know, like, anything. All I said was, like, you know, they aren't made by, you know, made in China. I actually made these myself, and they actually take 4 days to make, because if you turn to the side, you can actually see all the layers and why each one is individually different and why my glass is the best. No one can make like what I do. If you saw it in person, that's why I did so well for so long. And then I stopped doing jewelry because, like, I like to challenge myself. So I wanted to try, you know, a new medium, and it just happened to be, like, you know, my posters.
Can you talk a little bit about making art for a living? Is it tough to make ends meet? Are you doing well for yourself? What are the challenges there?
It's like, you know, well, like, doing well is, like, I guess it depends on, you know, each person's, like, you know, simple. Some people can make $100 and be like, oh, I'm doing really well. Some people make $1,000. It's like, oh, then I'm doing really well. For me, like, I do enough where I feel comfortable. Like, I don't have to worry about bills too much, but, like, like, for my art, it's not about the money. I never really care about the money. It's just, like, bonus points. Uh-huh. Like, still the main thing for me is just to know, like, I can meet so many amazing people. It's like, I get so many opportunities, like, you know, being on this with you guys. You know, I've, like, a bunch of celebrities. Like, one of the guys, Sasha from Grimm, like, he came to my booth and asked for a personal one. And then it's like, I made one for his crew and all of his other cast members, and hopefully, like, they're gonna do, like, a donation thing, and, you know, all the posters I would, you know, make for them would be for, you know, for charity. So it's like, I, for me, it's like the opportunities, all the other great things, meeting great people. Like, money is not really a big factor for me. It's just about doing it.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have a ton of time left, but I got wind of something pretty exciting about your past, and it has to do with a VH1 show that might take some listeners back to the 90s or early 2000s at least.
It was like 2008. Like, like, since I used to work in props and, you know, and art, like those sections, like I got opportunities of meeting and networking with other people. And it just happens that they needed a nerdy guy, you know, to be on a reality show about picking up women. So the show just, like, I don't know. For me, I was really shy. I was never good with women. And then the show teach me the basics of how to really attract women and how to improve yourself. Because as for me, like, my parents always sheltered me. Like, I couldn't even cross the street, you know, without getting yelled at. They're super, like, protective. And so I was really sheltered. But the reality show taught me, you know, I really, like, don't have to worry about, like, there's so much I can talk about that, about, like, the Asian culture. You know, most, like, Asian guys are, don't really have a lot of confidence around women. A lot of them play games. I play games. I still play games, video games, like, all my life. But, you know, it would be a whole new thing to talk about.
Did you feel yourself stereotyped on that show?
Oh yeah. an inside thing is, like, I dress normal. But, like, on the show, they purposely made me wear, like, nerdy stuff, wear my glasses, have my hair part down the middle. Like, my whole story of that whole, like, adventure, like, if I could have a show just to tell people, like, how to improve their lives, how to meet people and not to be shy and, like, all those Asian stereotypes, like, I have answers for, like, all of them.
Well, I think that's all the time we have. I wish we could go into more depth. Maybe we'll have a chance to interview you on a future segment.
I'd be super excited. I would appreciate it.
So I've been talking with Stephen Poon, if you've just tuned in. Stephen just created some amazing artwork in remembrance of Prince's passing. Jenna and Pamela are here to talk about it. We're going to go to them right now.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. And as you just heard Kanan say, we have some amazing donations courtesy of artist Stephen Kim that you were just listening to in an interview. He made a Prince tribute print, and Pamela, you saw it.
I really want it. I really want all my friends that are listening, because clearly my friends are listening to KBOO, obviously, right? My birthday is more than 6 months away, but I'm ready for it. I'm ready for that early gift. It's 100... I love saying this. It's $100 for a minimum pledge for a Prince print.
A Prince print. That's right. And if you would like to see, you can go onto Stephen's website. He's at outnerdme.com. He also has a Facebook page, and you can see this amazing art that he did. He also gave us some exclusive signed art. That Star Wars art. It has the very famous "I love you."
I know.
Yeah, that's how we like. We like it Han Solo style.
Oh my gosh! 1-877-500-5266. That's how you can claim any of these really awesome things. I mean, we were talking about it on Wednesday night, right? Like, this is a show that nerds are gonna love. I mean, we're Asians and Pacific Islanders, and, well, to be honest, like, we are always waiting for any volunteers who are interested to join our show, but also for nerds. Nerds!
Nerd time! We freaking love our nerds. And maybe it's just that we love ourselves. I don't know, but we just love
to
talk.
We love ourselves, definitely.
We love to talk Star Wars. We love to talk about all these things. We love to talk about pop culture, which is why we have API Nerd Talk, and that's what you heard in our first segment. We had the conductor, Paul Kim, there talking about his experience as an Asian conductor with the Oregon Symphony. We still have his tickets. But, you know, I was just thinking that even if you are personally not a person who is Asian or Pacific Islander, you still value the fact that shows like Pacific Underground get to be on KBOO, because where else do you hear shows like that where it's giving just a platform for the people who are the marginalized in this city, and just giving them the voice. I mean, you heard that really powerful, I thought, well, maybe I'm calling it powerful because it's us, but the roundtable segment about what's in a name. You know, people have just these names and we don't really think about it, but KBOO allows us to tell those stories and allows us to have a platform to say, these things are uncomfortable and we need a place to talk about them. We need a place to voice our concerns. And that's Pacific Underground right here on KBOO. And if you support that idea, that support that it is time to give voices to the community, become a member today. And you can do that by calling 877-500-5266 or go online and go to kboo.fm. We have a donate button there because you love Pacific Underground. You love KBOO.
And let's just have some real talk. Are you ready for some real talk,
Jenna? Let's get
real.
Okay,
let's get real. The stuff that we have been covering has been stuff that, we call you white people. White people need to listen to as well when we're having our segment called Your English is So Good. And our member, Kanan, is talking about a racist microaggression that happens to him. This stuff happens all the time to us. This is what happens when you have Asians and Pacific Islanders in Portland. We're going to share these stories with each other. And honestly, white people that are interested in being allies, they're interested in not just talking the talk on all of the progressive and solidarity talk, but you walk it. You walk that walk with your fingers. That's by right. Calling 877-500-5266. This is how you're going to be supporting the kind of work that we're doing, where we're educating people about, honestly, racial justice. What?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Racial justice and how it goes, not just from your everyday, it goes into Star Wars, it goes into everything we talk about here. You heard Stevens, you know, talking about just his experience being a glass artist and how he can't even just do that without having to get some microaggressions. And so we are really, really glad that we have this platform here. Thank you to KABU. You should thank them too by calling 877-500-5266. Back to Pacific Underground.
I am talking with Simon Tam from the band The Slants. Have you ever been told your English is so good?
Well, for me, yeah, it happens all the time. It actually happened once in one of my graduate classes here in Oregon. And then they kind of followed up with the infamous question, where are you from? And this is a MBA class here in Oregon. And I kind of gave them a stink eye, and they knew at that point. They knew that they screwed up. And I was like, well, I was born in San Diego. And they said, oh, it's because of your accent. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's that crazy San Diego accent. People can't figure us out. So it's just the kind of the idea of like being a perpetual foreigner, to not meet the ideas of like the stereotype of someone who speaks English. As far as being asked or complimented upon, as far as my English goes, that happens all the time. Or what actually I would say occurs more often is people hear my voice either on the phone or on the radio or something like that. And then they'll see me and they're like, oh, I thought you looked different. And, you know, I remember I worked at a company where I worked with a lot of employees throughout the Pacific Northwest. They knew I was fluent in Spanish. They knew that my numbers were great. And then they saw me and they're just like, we thought you looked a lot different in person. And I'm like, well, I look the same. I might sound different, but that's because you might attach an accent to my face or to my, like, or you might assume that because of my voice that I look white. But yeah, it's just one of those interesting things of kind of navigating being in the U.S.
Because it's radio, I kind of wish that there was a good sound cue of you just shrugging right there. It's like, shrug. For most of us, it's sort of like, okay, we can hear your English is so good. How many times? Or you can hear, what do I hear a lot? Just, where are you really from? Mm-hmm. And maybe the fifth, where are you really from, will get me.
I don't know. I think of them all as opportunities to talk with somebody, to engage with them about like why they're asking that. In those situations, I try and think like, what if the situation were reversed? Because there was a time where I was not very aware of things as well. And I maybe perhaps genuinely want to connect with someone. And so I just try and think, well, what can we do to actually navigate this conversation, make it a little more productive and make them feel like they're not being attacked? Because the moment people feel attacked, they get really defensive and then their shields are up and they're more concerned about how they look than doing the right thing. And so if you can get under them where they're not necessarily being defensive, but you have a find an opportunity to address those things, that they're generally more willing to kind of like take that as a lesson to be learned.
Thank you. I feel like I got like a very small version of your TED Talk. You have several, but
everything in my life is a version of a TED Talk. It seems
like, this could be a TED Talk.
Well, it's what I'm working on, actually. I wanted to make a new talk called Why I Always Read the Comment Section.
Oh my gosh. Then, you definitely have to do that one for me.
That was producer Pamela Santos talking with Simon Tam of the band The Slants. You're listening to one of the tracks that you can download from the Slants album, Slant Slants Revolution. If you become a KBOO member today, it's called Who Shot the Radio?
Well, that's the end of our show. Thank you to the whole Pacific Underground team, Sam Parrish, and KBOO. A special thanks to our guests, Paul Kim, Stephen Poon, and Simon Tam, who you just heard interviewed. And as always, thanks to Chops for our theme music that you heard at the beginning of the show. For more, check us out on Facebook and Twitter at PAC Underground. You can also download our shows on SoundCloud and iTunes. Thank you everyone so much for listening, and thanks for supporting KBOO, Portland. KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Poshine's Cafe de la Sol, a Black-owned restaurant located at 8139 North Denver Avenue in the Kenton neighborhood, serving Southern soul food. Lunch was provided by Produce Row Cafe on 204 Southeast Oak Street. Produce Row has been serving pub food and drink since 1953. Dinner was provided by Marrakesh on 1201.